G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. That's incorrect. Oh. Had a tough day. Tough start.
It's 6 past 6, mate. How can you have a tough start?
We've been up for a while. So, you know that. And anyway, I'm a bit out of sorts. Still over the place, but I'll balance up.
You guys just stay with us. Stay focused. I need you to stay focused. We're a man down.
Don't get me started on that.
I need you focused.
Don't get me started on that.
Was it? John Hastings is with us, one of our favourites, of course, on a Tuesday. Great to have him as part of the Breakfast Club. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Harf. Did you have a good break?
Had a great break.
Excellent.
Excellent work it was. It's nice to be back, though, chatting with
John Hastings is complicit in the fact that our producer's not here today.
Was it?
He has played a role.
What's happened? What's the role? What have I missed?
Our producer tried to take on John Hastings.
What? One-on-one in the nets? You got one to a bit of chin music, Duke. Just send one up his up to the schnoz level.
We'll have to ask another member of our Breakfast Club later on in the week, I think, about this sort of thing. But it was a lovely day at Guinea's Day on Saturday.
Oh, very nice day.
Someone tried to step up to the plate.
Guinea's Day.
Failed miserably.
That was a recipe for disaster from our little orange pant wearing fellow to try and take on the big fellow. That's not going to work in any level. Any level, Duke.
Like a chihuahua trying to take on a German shepherd.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Oh, that's disappointing. I wasn't aware that was a situation. Duke schooled one of our young fellas.
Been excited for weeks.
Duke.
Like the kid in prep trying to take on the grade 6 kid.
Oh, Duke.
Really excited about it. It's like a big brother situation.
Had to get out the front, and no real turn of foot. It's just a big grind. So I had to get out there early.
Get going from the 800.
Get going from
make a real staying
from
test.
The 16. As soon as I jumped out of the barrier, it was on. So
make it a real staying test, and our man was found wanting.
I got a message from our man on Sunday saying, I don't think I can get in tomorrow. I'm feeling a bit under the weather. I said, it's like that, is it? Right, I see. Made his way in yesterday, and then it's all just caught up with him.
It's Tuesday.
That was second day.
That was Saturday.
Second day dust is what they call that.
Second day dust.
John is a more experienced, mature campaigner, comes in fresh as a daisy.
With your conditioning.
Been in a cafe all day yesterday.
Yep.
No dramas at all. A 3-hour journey just to get in here from down in Frankston. Who's our producer? No.
I forgot a table actually on Sunday. I spent 12 hours in the cafe on Sunday, and after a big day at Guinea's Day, and I just missed an order on Sunday. I was disappointed.
What did they order down there at Mr. Frankston?
It was an omelette and a brekkie wrap, I think, and I missed it. Didn't put it through.
What sort of brekkie wrap are you running?
Smoked bacon, spinach, feta, beetroot relish. Bit of scrambled eggs. It's very nice.
Smoked bacon, beetroot,
and spinach,
feta,
baby spinach,
and some relish.
Yeah, very nice.
And some eggs, of course. Mm-hmm. No avocado in there. Didn't think about going to smash.
No.
You have the crazy kids that they're crazy for
avocado's
it. Avocado's
about
kids.
$10 an avocado at the moment as well. So I don't think they'll be making their way into the breakfast wrap.
I do love, as a sidebar, a breakfast wrap.
Yes,
it's a very good thing.
I do too.
I have been to the cafe, and I didn't have the brekkie wrap.
What did you have? Well, no, that would be exotic.
Exactly. It was too much for me.
You're so boring.
What did you have?
He would have bacon and eggs.
No. I just had a crumpet.
He had a crumpet.
Dr. Marty's crumpets. Yeah, they're very good.
The kids and I had crumpets.
Oh, dear.
They are good.
No, but there were other things I could have had, but I didn't see them, and I was under pressure at the time.
What do you mean you didn't see them?
No, because they're up on the counter. Behind the glass.
You're saying there's a system flaw.
Hmm?
You're saying there's a system flaw. Is that what you're saying down there? Is this feedback for John?
Well, might be, but I didn't see the fact that there were brekkie burgers and stuff like that up on the counter. Anyway,
burgers. They're very nice brekkie burgers. Very nice. Do you often get people like our orange pant wearing man that try and take you on because you've got a reputation?
Yes,
John.
And it's sometimes I don't like it, but. You've got a reputation to uphold. You've got to just keep ploughing on. Sometimes you just want to have a nice, relaxing day at the races, and
there's an upstart. There's napping. Yapping at your heels.
It's a chihuahua.
Can we, George? Can we, Peter Miles? George, can we?
Come on, John. I want to go with you. Give us your best.
Well, that young fella has been schooled with the two-day dust. As I'm going to use, I've never come across the two-day dust program, but I'm going to use that a lot now, Duke. I like that a lot.
God. Yeah, it happens. The day after you're okay, it's the next day. It's just all out of the system. And you're no good. Tired.
Is Mitch Marsh 2 days? He's on 2 day dust after a punch in the wall the other day.
I don't know what's going on there. I saw a clip of Adam Voges speaking on the news last night. So if that's the case and he has broken his hand, which looks like he has, scans are revealed. It's not a good look, especially for the captain of the state as well.
Let's have a listen to Adam Voges. I'm glad you've mentioned him because we do have a grab from the WA champ legend last night talking about Mitch Marsh's situation.
It's not appropriate from any Western Australian cricketer, let alone the skipper. So we spoke about that yesterday. Mitch spoke to the group about it. He acknowledged that as a leader of Western Australian cricket, that's not good enough on his behalf. And he certainly acknowledged that to the group. And as a group, we won't stand for that sort of behaviour. For him to jeopardise potentially his position and potentially jeopardise him playing cricket for us, we don't need those dramas, to be quite honest. We understand the frustrations that come from high profile and high performance sport, but he needs to be better, and but I'm sure he'll learn from this.
Mitch is a good person, and this is one moment of frustration, but it might cost him a long period out of the game. He went on to say it, and Voges there speaking last night about Mitch Marsh, who, as you rightly say, Duke, has had scans confirm a broken hand sustained when he did punch that wall at the Wacker on Sunday.
It's very, very frustrating.
What a goose.
It's
who would ever do such a thing?
Ben Stokes.
You would never do that.
Never do such a thing.
You'd never punch a wall.
He's had 41 first innings, and then he's got out, caught and bowled Jackson Bird for 53 in the second innings.
And then that was a couple of balls after the break. So it was an inopportune time, really, to be playing that sort of shot straight after the break. I think that was the frustration that he had. And again, two starts. I mean, if he'd made 120, 130, it's a great way to start the summer for the platform. Apparently, he batted very well in that time. So how would you handle that half? I mean, you clearly don't go out to purposefully break your hand. And there are a lot of cricketers that would get into the rooms and, you know, release some frustration in a variety of different ways.
Yes.
Some do it more effectively than others. Some do it in an entertaining fashion. Do you have to talk to them, or do you have to say that's unacceptable, or is it just one of those things?
Oh, there'd be absolutely a conversation. Absolutely there would be. Because there's ramifications. There are similar ramifications, not only for Mitch, but for the team, let alone the country. But it's when you are a leader of the team, your behaviour has to be different. You can't just be this flying off the handle type personality in the dressing room. It doesn't matter what sport it is. You need to be setting the example. And that's a responsibility that comes with a position. And Mitch is fully aware of that. And that level of frustration is fine, but that the way of executing his venting of that situation, frustration, is absolutely unacceptable. Unacceptable. And he's put himself in a position for no reason where he not only hurts himself, but he hurts his team. And that's an unacceptable position to be for a leader of a team.
Well, I've never really understood going off the handle
when you're
a bowler. Yeah, I know that. But there's been frustrating times when I've been very close to 100 and got out. But you never come off and
how many times
start smashing up 1150s. That's no good. But that's the thing. I've seen blokes come in and
who's
tear
the worst?
Changes up.
Who's the worst? Who was the worst you saw?
Hodgie was pretty bad at times. Dan Christian was probably the worst. He mellowed a lot when he got to Victoria, but I just never really understood it. Maxwell's had his time of being a tornado in the change room, but
what's a tornado though? What happens?
Oh, you're throwing your bat from when you walk in, and then you smack your locker up, and you're throwing your pads around, and it's. Everyone knows you're hurting. You got out. Well, just sit down and think about what you've done rather than trying to throw a tantrum and letting the teammates know that you're actually disappointed. Because for me, it was always like, oh, mate, settle down. I'm trying to, more often than not, blokes are coming out. I'm trying to get padded up, ready to walk out there to bat. So I never really understood it. I never really got it through my head. I wasn't a massive fan of it. More often than not, if you got out, it's your own fault anyway.
Correct. And what about from a leadership perspective, from a captain's perspective, Duke?
Yeah, disappointing. I never saw any of my captains do it. Certainly not Cameron White. Yeah, certainly not over the journey. You know. Oh.
One's come to mind.
Saw Ricky Ponting throw his box at a TV one day in the World Cup. That was entertaining.
Well, see, that's not going to happen.
It was an accident, though. It flicked and smashed in the corner of the TV.
How do you throw your box accidentally?
We sort of, because you have the jock strap, I think it got caught. He sort of tried to slam it on the ground and got caught and flung around and hit the television. It made the press as well. It was during the World Cup in 2011. But, yeah, that was probably the only time where I saw any of the leaders do it.
The stories were that Michael Bevan was clearly the best.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
Some amazing stories
really?
Of Michael Bevan.
Well, you think of Bevan, cool, calm, collected, the Iceman of finishing games.
Yeah.
And then when he comes into the change rooms, he just tore it up, apparently.
So. Yeah.
Is that why he stayed out there? So he didn't have to?
I think there was a story of him throwing a boot. I don't know why he took off his spikes and he's hurled it. And it stuck in the wall, spikes into the wall. So that was quite a good one. But the best one I had heard was that someone had come into the room. They couldn't find him. And he's still, he's all his gear under the shower.
Under the shower, yeah.
The pads on and everything.
Slats, there's a story of Slats.
He's in his gear.
He's done flushing his bat as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Down the toilet.
Flushing
your bat down the toilet. I can't remember who it was. Someone, one of the tail enders, went in and got it out of there. started sanding it up. You don't want this, Slats? No? Okay. Perfect. I love it.
That's funny. Mm. That is very funny. No, not cool by Mitch. Mitch is 27. He's not 22. Like, he's been around international cricket. He's been around domestic cricket for a long time now. I'm really surprised. I must admit, I was really surprised when I heard that news.
Were you?
Yep.
Yeah, I was a bit too, to be honest. I'd never really seen that side of Mitch Marsh before. So
throw your bat. Yeah, no worries. Throw your bat.
Yeah.
No dramas. You know, into your bag, hit the bottom of the chair, whatever you do. That, you know, that's fine.
A moment of madness.
But come on. Punching a wall. Punching a wall,
I think. I wouldn't do
Adam.
That. I would never punch a wall.
No, I know that.
But I do think it does show the pressure that these guys are under with, you know, international selection just around the corner, that these guys, it means a lot to them and they're feeling the pressure.
Well, that's their to deal with. That's their problem to deal with. If they can't deal with the pressure in the lead up, how are they going to go when the heat's on in the kitchen? When the real kitchen is on fire, how's he going to go? Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm certainly not condoning it, but I can understand it.
No, unacceptable for Mitch. He'd be called in the leadership meeting. We'd be having a good chat, he and I.
Yeah, well, he is the captain.
Quite
That's
right.
So. He'd be having a good chat to the coach. He might not have that position too much longer. AFL coaches punch walls, says an SMS. That is spot on, and it's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
That's you can tell him to his face?
Yep.
But the walls in the up in the box seem to be a little bit thinner than, say, change room walls that are a bit more... MDF board or whatever it's called, isn't it? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the MDF, yeah.
MDF?
Yep, that's right.
That's from my building days.
And they're often, and in change rooms, they're often those MDF boards are the fascia for the brick.
Yes.
So whereas the plaster wall and the sort of partition set up in a coach's box, you know there's going to be a hole somewhere.
Exactly.
Just don't want to hit the stud.
Don't hit the stud.
Don't hit the stud. You want to hit the gap. But still, come on. You don't need to punch a wall. Goodness
good.
Me. Goodness me. How hard is it? Throw a pen or something. Go and get a pen in your hand just to have on standby just in case you need to throw something. Get a pen.
I do remember one day being dismissed, which was a very unfortunate decision.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, this could go anywhere.
And
is your father listening?
He probably will be. And I walked off the field, and later that evening, it was an away fixture. And
later that evening,
there was a barn dance that was, how some clubs have.
Hang on, whoa, time out. This has got a whole lot of layers I've got to get through.
It wasn't our club.
Like a line dancing sort of setup?
Oh, you know, who's running a barn dance? I don't know, but you know the Saturday night things they have functions.
Oh, like a disco.
Something like that. I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Was there scooting going on?
But there were hay bales stacked up in the room for the evening activity. I don't know. Maybe they had a petting zoo or something like that later that day.
You do love a petting zoo.
So I may have attacked the hay bale and turned it into straw on the floor.
You disintegrated the bale with your bash, did you?
Yeah.
Or did you just rip it out hand by hand?
No, it was just I had a weapon in my hand. But I must say that it was interesting because I was getting stuck into my son for the way he was behaving after being dismissed the other day.
This is a bit rich, isn't it?
I found it really difficult because...
Do as I say, good as I do.
Firstly, I started thinking about all the times my father said it to myself. And then I'm thinking, I'm really being a hypocrite here.
Yep.
So I actually explained to him that I was very poor, very, very poor growing up. Upon being dismissed.
Hang on. Just growing up, or is there still elements?
No, I've improved significantly.
Scripted. Yeah.
No one can get me out, so I don't know. No, that's not true.
Give me a new ball.
The first slob of the season, I'll be really keen to see, Duke.
But it was actually a real lesson for me that I actually felt embarrassed thinking about some of the things that I did growing up. So there you go. That's what's maturity.
Did you play on the weekend, by the way?
No.
Why not?
I was at Junction Oval.
Oh, of course, that was good fun.
Oh, what a waste of a Saturday that was.
By the look of the scores, I was probably better at the Junction Oval than I was.
What are they going to do there at the Junction?
Look, I think they were a victim of the conditions beforehand. We've talked about this a lot in that...
I could only do one day. I was there.
Yeah, you were there to start, and we were a bit surprised at how hard it was to start with. But they had had the rain before the first day, and it was like glue. It all stuck together, and it just wouldn't break up. But I mean, you've seen the situation at the MCG for a number of years, and it's hard work for the bowlers, and I don't know. I don't know what to do.
It seems to me like they've tried to go five different ways. The curator's tried to make it spin. He's tried to leave a bit of grass on it. He's tried to roll it and make it really hard like he did this game.
Is it a new square at the Junction?
Well, it's only, 12, 18 months old, I suppose.
Just over two years.
Yeah. But every time I go there, it seems to be that he's tried something a little bit different. So I don't know what they're going to do there, but it's just getting flatter and flatter.
Well, it was the first time they'd used a kookaburra ball on the new Junction, because all the other games had been played with a Duke after Christmas.
So is that an issue? Is the kookaburra ball becoming redundant?
No, I don't know.
Out of the business.
Saw the ball. I showed you a photo of it. It's horrendous.
Did see the ball.
But I think any time where you're bowling spin in the seventh over on the first innings pitch with one...
No, and that's what happened,
And that's exactly what happened. It's not good.
Tom Andrews is rolling out left-arm orthodox after half an hour. Yeah. So... That's when we knew there was a bit of an issue brewing.
So had that been me and I was in your position, Adam White, I would have been on the phone call to the skipper at the Warrandyte Cricket Club saying, I reckon I might be able to squeeze a day in on Saturday. They might not need me here.
That's being unprofessional.
Why is that?
Because I accepted a job and that's a commitment that you do it from the first ball to the last ball.
No, that's not quite true. You've got to work. You got to balance out what's happening in the game.
And there's plenty of things to do while you're there that... can entertain yourself, and I had a brilliant 4 days. Thoroughly enjoyed myself.
There was a moment there was a photo going around of Adam and Marcus Harris. Yes. in the commentary box.
Couldn't get a word in.
I thought there was going to be a proposal. Like he was, like the love in his eyes.
I actually said to John,
was quite unusual.
Go and get a coffee. Go and
stay out of
go
it.
Go somewhere.
Said, do not want you here anywhere.
I thought there was a proposal coming.
Do anyway. Not put your lips up to the microphone and speak.
So, I thought I was going to be a best man.
No problem.
In a wedding, not too far away.
Very comfortable. Very comfortable. You should have listened to that because you would have learnt a little bit.
I don't need to learn. I'm ungetoutable. Can you tell me about the news that you were alluding to before the break about the water cricket? Duke mentioned before, talking about tantrums and skippers, Brad Hodge and Cameron White. They're in the news at the moment.
Yeah, they are. So Greg Chappell has retired, finally. And
you seem to be joyous about that. Is that joyous?
Am I joyous about that? No, he's just, as I said, he's finally retired. He's been around a long time and it's time for some regeneration. And the people that are sort of in line to potentially get that position are Brad Hodge, Cameron White, Maxi Klinger, and also George Bailey.
They're what about Ed Cowan? Is he in the mix?
I think he might be. I'm not sure whether it is for T20, though.
Well, he's on the board of New South Wales Cricket as well, so it might make it a little bit... A little bit tougher.
So this is a full-time 2020 select the role?
I'm not sure whether it's full-time, but I think it has the potential to become full-time. Because, of course, there's the T20 World Cup's not too far away, and I know that Cricket Australia have felt that they would like someone that has got either skin in the game or has just recently retired who has a better understanding of the way T20 cricket is played. Someone that's played it, someone has... And you jump in here, Hasto, that's something that the players have wanted, and I think Cricket Australia has listened, so it's just about finding the appropriate player.
This is a very good move. It's a must, and it probably should have happened 3, 4, even 5 years ago, because I think some of the players that have been picked on ideology rather than actually, you know, the right way to go about picking a T20 side. Mm. So this has needed to happen for a little while, and I'm glad that they've finally done it.
Well, And I'm coming from a long way further afield than you two.
Greg Chappell hasn't played a T20 game at all, has he?
This is my point. If you're looking at guys you want to have casting their eye over this, Hodge and White are the two number one picks, aren't they?
Absolutely.
They're Rowell and Anderson
in
terms of T20 selection draft.
Absolutely.
They're the ones you want, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, Cameron, you know, he comes in here a lot. He's known as being one of the great cricket brains of Australian cricket now for a long time. He captained Australia in short form cricket. So, and then of course Brad Hodge, who is at least slightly removed now in that he doesn't play. Now, I don't know if Cameron got the position whether he would have to retire without playing a game for the strikers. I'm not sure. George Bailey is another one that has been, my understanding is absolutely been in the mix, but he's still playing first-class cricket, let alone for the Hurricanes. So I'm not sure where it sits with him. And Klinger has also recently retired.
I think the advantage that Whitey would have over the other two would be that he's a very, very good person to identify talent.
Yes.
He's been able to do it for the last however long I can remember, is that he'll look at a young kid and go, you know, this kid's going to be a gun, you know, and move them on forward. So that's where I think he would have the advantage over the other two. But obviously, I think any one of those three would be very good at it.
Could you be a selector and still play in the Big Bash?
I don't know.
In the case of Cameron, he's not going to
probably not
put himself up for national selection.
I don't think you can do that.
No, I don't. I think there's a bit of a conflict there as well. If someone knocks you over and or you have a run in with them on the field, are you going to hold a grudge when it comes to selection table? I don't know. I'd probably not, but I don't think so.
I mean, Cameron is working with the under-17s now, the Vic under-17s, so he's sort of going down that coaching path. I mean, I think he's still captaining Melbourne this year, but he knows his cricket. He's coming towards the end, and he's very passionate about selection and very passionate about coaching. So I think it would be a good one for Australia to go in that path, but I'm being absolutely biased as well. So
heavily, and that's cool. But I don't think you can do that both. You can't play and
I don't think so.
It's a no-go.
Yep.
And we do read that Trevor Holmes and Justin Langer are keen for an appointment in that position as soon as possible. So we're expecting some sort of news in the next little while.
They're going to try and turn our T20 form around because it's been diabolical in the international arena.
And they have got no idea what way to go. You know, Darcy Short and also Chris Lynn were in.
Now they've gone Smith and Warner
They've gone the complete other way. So, I think it needs to happen pretty soon.
Mm. Speaking of Smith and... in the world of cricket, Tim Payne yesterday talking about his elevation perhaps back to the captaincy of Australia. He's going to be doing some big BL coverage with Channel 7. Their commentary team.
He'll be very good, I think.
Payne. Just on that half, what's happened there is that he has retired, essentially, from the Big Bash. So he clearly would be playing for the Hurricanes.
Yep.
And he's decided that he's not going to do that to try and prolong his Test career. And also, as a result of that, he actually signed with Channel 7 a long time ago. This is something that's not a new thing. But this is all about him trying to preserve his Test career for as long as possible. And I think it's a really good one.
Well, I'm enjoying having the job at the moment, he says, as captain. I certainly hope Steve Smith does captain Australia again one day, and if he does, I'd be fully supportive of it.
What's your view on that now, Hasto, as it stands at the moment? Seeing what you saw through the Ashes, and I know it's still only relatively new, do we see Steve bat better because he didn't have the burden of captaincy? Because it did seem to weigh heavily on him.
Hmm. Well, it's a tough one. Not having spoken to Smudge for a little while, I don't know. I would like to see him just go about it this summer again and then make an opinion at the end of the summer. Because I think if he has another run like he did over in the Ashes, then maybe just let him go, let him play and just keep being prolific and piling them on. But if we're getting to a stage at the end of it where Tim Payne hasn't got a run all summer and we're looking for the next captain, then I would give it back to Steve Smith because you know he's a very good cricket brain and he can do a good job.
And isn't that the issue? There's no other captain candidate to put their hand up. Yep. That if it is that Tim Payne doesn't continue, it's almost like he's staying there as long as there needs to be someone before another captain.
That's what
stands
it feels
up.
Like, yeah. Doesn't it? And that would really hurt me, I reckon. So I couldn't help but think,
and I think Tim Payne is still a brilliant gloveman, but from a versatility point of view, I couldn't help. Alex Carey was unbelievable when he was batting on the Saturday. Now, I know that the circumstances were such that it was a bit easier for him, but he batted extremely well.
Is this at the junction?
Yeah, and he could easily...
I've forgotten that game, right?
He could easily bat at six, and then you could play someone like a Michael Neeser at seven or a Pattinson at seven and play the extra bowler. I'm starting to think Carey's that good. Now, there were other ways to go back to Matthew Wade to bat at six and keep. But I think now the fact he's not even going to keep for Tasmania,
that's done,
that option of him coming back to keep for Australia.
Well, we know Tim Payne's in hot form with about two.
Yeah, he got 100, second 100.
13 years apart. It's a good effort.
He got a double in his first game, or his first season.
Against WA as well, wasn't
Fifth
it?
Game. Fifth
yeah.
game.
First season, yeah. So that's a long time between drinks. It would have been a nice moment for him, actually, over there.
My word. And Andrew McDonald's in the mix for the Rajasthan Royals gig.
Yeah, well, he's got a 100 gig as well. He's coaching one of the 100 sides over there.
It's Midlands.
Be interesting.
Edgbaston team.
Whether one of those roles has to give for Andrew McDonald.
I was just going to think, to ask you that, whether or not there is a price to pay for that, if he's going to be doing this T20 stuff around the world.
It'd be my tip for the next Australian
coach. $1.05
as well.
T20 or Test?
All up.
He'll take it from Just On Langer.
Yeah.
Is that right?
There's a text here to say that was the hay bale, was it menu related? No, it wasn't.
I reckon it might have been.
That's
a great point.
Where that took place, there are very good hot dogs.
That's a great point. Who was that?
Always have a hot dog before you bat.
Any name attached?
Menu related. No
name attached. There should be. That's excellent stuff.
Yep.
Would normally be rewarded. Not to be today, unfortunately. But spot on. It was, in fact, menu related.
I'm really confident in the young list we're building up the Gold Coast Suns. So to be able to put an extra 2 years on my contract, I'm just excited for what's to come. No, it was always Gold Coast for me. I said from the start that I was going to wait till the end of the year to make a decision. I felt no pressure to re-sign earlier or anything like that. And I just waited until the right moment and re-signed. It's not really on my mind too much playing with Max at the moment. I'm more just thinking about Gold Coast and the exciting opportunity I've got to play for the Suns over the next few years.
It was a big day for football yesterday. Finally, some good news going on from the Gold Coast perspective, to the point where the doyen that is Mike Sheehan, former chief football writer of the Herald Sun, where Glenn McFarlane works diligently day to day and basically writes the paper, said it was the most significant day in the history of the Gold Coast Suns. So welcome you, Macca. Good morning to you. Do you agree with Mike?
Yeah, I do. Well, not the most significant day, but it's thereabouts, half for sure.
So you don't agree?
No.
So you don't think Mike's...
Well, no, I think it was...
You think Mike's lost it, is what you're saying?
I mean, getting Gary Ablett there was pretty important I would have thought that would have been the launch of a footy club.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, but we're looking X amount of years down the track.
I know we're looking in the rearview mirror here a bit.
Yeah, it was pretty important.
Big at the time, absolutely.
Massive.
But where they are now...
I had a press conference at Crown, I remember.
Yeah,
it well.
I was there. Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I was definitely there.
Were you there, Duke?
Probably a bit, Duke. Were you there? It was a bigger signing than Carmichael Hunt, put it that way.
Well, he's got Carmichael. I think it is.
It's right up there because it's a statement, isn't it? That's the most important thing. It's a statement. It's not just a statement to the rest of the competition. I reckon, importantly, it's a statement to Matt Rowell and Noah Anderson, who are going to be the number one, number two picks in the upcoming draft. It's a statement to them that this footy club's going to be around, and there's few people who don't want it around.
So, Macca, now...
Why do you look at Adam White when you're going to say that?
So, I'm nervous now.
So now this has happened, and I actually agree with Harv. I think it is right up there.
It's definitely up there, no question.
Because of where they're at
the moment. Maybe not number one, but...
Yeah, but I think closer to it is, just because they're in crisis. So why wouldn't now Gold Coast go after their brother?
I think that's what they'll do. Now, whether they can actually achieve that, why not turn the offensive on St Kilda? That's probably the key, isn't it? Now, the two brothers would love to play together. Now we know that there's a commitment there. I think it's it is behoven on them to actually have a crack.
So what is more important for Gold Coast? Is it getting the Anderson-Rao combination, or is it actually saying, well, we're prepared to give up 2 or 1 for Max to get them up? Now that Ben's locked in, would you, or is it just too dynamic, that duo of getting the two of them up together?
I think it's too dynamic. I think they're so close, those two. I think it's a generational type thing if they can get those two together and to be up there. When you're talking about getting hold of Max, I'm thinking maybe a couple of years down the track, more so than this time around. I'd be loath to give up. Particularly, I think it's a really bad look. I know the AFL would allow them to do it, but they've got that priority pick. To trade it off again, I don't know. Not for me.
Max might not want to leave as well. If Simon Lethlean gets all 16 of his trades that he wants to get through, then they might actually have a really good year next
year. Yeah, I have a suspicion that if it wasn't that Rowell and Anderson were going to go 1 and 2 in the draft, I'm not sure they would have actually got the priority pick. I actually think it was a way of concocting something to get two to go up together.
So you're saying they're not really mates?
Can hopefully keep them...
I see where you're coming from.
They get the twins up there together, and then they have the two best mates up there together. Then all of a sudden they're rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need them rolling. If they're going to be fair dinkum about it, this is almost, in a sense, ground zero from the Gold Coast Suns. We know how much pressure they're under to make it work. They've got to make... If they're going to stay there, we don't want to see a club that's going to be an embarrassment next year. And they were an embarrassment at stages of this year, weren't they? That was the problem. So I think... I'm not having a go at Mike, and I agree that it is one of a number. No, I love Mike. You know that. No, not at all. And I was worried when you said the main man before, because Mark Robinson, as you know, listens to this program.
Well, he loves the program.
I get a text as soon as I get off air to say, mate, you're not the main man. You're far from the main man.
Former chief, I said. Former chief. The current chief would be upset about that. Any mention of Mike.
Yeah, the current chief.
The current chief will get over it, especially if he has a winner through the carnival.
True. Very important.
He quite likes a winner.
He likes a winner. He never loses either.
Do you think Glenn McFarlane from the Herald Sun that Ollie Wines was offered up as a potential trade situation for Carlton?
Oh, gee, puts me on the spot here, doesn't he? So no, I don't know too many journalists who make things up. So I think we're at a stage now where we've almost jumped the shark in terms of the trade period, I think.
Oh, we'll get to that shortly.
And with that, I've got a lot of time for Sam Edmund. He's an outstanding journo. He is insistent this has happened. Whether it's come from someone close to Ollie, I'm not sure. But he is insistent that this happened. I don't know many journos who make things up. Whitey, do you?
I would like to support Sam. I believe
that's what I'm saying.
I believe it did happen.
So do I. So why?
Can we back that up with some sort of evidence?
My information is, I haven't spoken to Sam, but my information would suggest that it did happen.
And I think you'll find your information is right.
So let's break it down a little bit then, because as we know, lying is the second language.
It is.
This is why we want to talk about this.
Yeah, it's a joke.
So Port Adelaide made a statement. They don't often do things for this type of thing, but they made released a statement yesterday saying, under no circumstances was he discussed and was our captain put on the trade table for any situation. Nick Geeshan, who is Ollie Wines' manager, said, no, it didn't happen. What are you talking about? This is disgusting, basically. I'm paraphrasing. And then Mick Agresta, the list manager from the Blues, has spoken in the last 24 hours saying, no, he wasn't offered to Carlton in a trade scenario.
Mm-hmm. And they're allowed to say that?
That's just their prerogative to say that.
All I'm saying is that I don't know many journos who would...
Sam is sticking by a story.
As he should, because he believes it to be true. And, I mean, you look at situations with other trades, you hear whispers around here, there and everywhere, and clubs will deny. Adelaide Crows, and I'm not saying any of these people are, there may have been a brief conversation, a brief thrown up discussion, but we're talking about the Adelaide Crows, who are about to name a new coach soon.
Well, are they or not? Well, first happened yesterday.
Wednesday, we understand it might be Wednesday. It's getting closer, ticking away. But they denied so much that there was an issue with this camp. They had a press conference. They had a press conference and said there is no issue with this camp. They had a Saturday afternoon press conference to say, and now we've got a mass exodus of players because there was a problem with that. I'm not saying any of these guys are lying, but there may have been. My information is the same as yours, Whitey.
Well, no, what we can say, someone is.
Someone's lying.
Can we
stop it, please?
Well, but this is what I'm saying. This is what I want to talk about.
Someone
this
is, Macca. There's four different stories.
There's different versions of lying.
But I think we have got to a point now. Yes. The AFL have wanted this to go as long as possible to keep themselves in the news for as long as they possibly can and, you know, affect the Spring Carnival and affect every other sport. That's what they want to try and do. But we have got to a point now where we've created trade radio, we've created all these columns and inches of newspaper space, but it's all about nothing because at the end of the day, everyone is lying to everybody. Clubs lie to clubs. Clubs lie to managers, managers lie to clubs, managers lie to the media, everyone lies to everybody. And it all is all because it is a game of poker.
Mm-hmm.
So in poker, you fundamentally lie because you're trying to create some uncertainty or to protect your own interests. And that's what's happening. So, but everyone's just getting angry about it because the fans out there are getting angry and they're getting emotional because they don't know who to believe. Mm-hmm. And usually the fans won't believe the media. They'll believe the clubs and
which
the managers.
Which is unfortunate in a lot of ways.
It's unfortunate, but it's understandable.
Sure, understand.
But everyone's just doing it to everyone.
You're
so
right.
let's just cut the nonsense.
Let's have 3 days.
3 days.
Absolutely.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Get it done.
Not
because
good for
they talk to each other for the entire year anyway.
Well, they do.
It's not like, oh, we've only got
the whole
this
problem.
Little period.
This is actually the whole problem, that the trade discussion is going on now from February onwards, even longer, perfectly honest. So most of the stuff's already done, really. Most of the stuff, there's a few little trades here that are argy-bargy. Not little trades, there's a few big trades that are argy-bargy towards the end. But most of this stuff we've been talking about for months now.
Yeah, and that's right. The window is actually irrelevant.
It's irrelevant now.
Because it goes on for the entire year.
Completely and utterly.
But in the situation, this is where I think it's bordering on irresponsible what's happening now. Because there is this thing, oh, well, it's noise and it's AFL. It's good copy. It's good talk back topics, all that sort of stuff. Good radio suggestions. But in a time when there is a real premium on health, the mental health of people, there are footballers out there that don't know where they're going to be playing next year. They get their names mentioned, whether they are or they aren't going, when that's all getting done without them being involved in it. I just think we're getting to a really dangerous state with the way that it is all handled and the way that players are spoken about like they are casino chips. And I just think it's got to the point of being really, really irresponsible in the landscape that we are in with mental health.
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation. I think that is quite a broad brush and broad topic.
Oh, it's a broad brush, but we're into broad brushes.
We're more into a refined.
I
understand what you're saying, and I think there is an element of that absolutely. But I just said before 7 o'clock, Macca, you may not have been listening.
I was listening.
All it does is this period is just make people angry because there's so much
and there's people angry
white noise and just lies.
And don't the punters out there who are having a crack at the media, don't think that we're not angry at stages as well. We cop it as well. Like I try and do a little bit of racing at this time of year as well, just to keep me sane in a lot of ways. But the media gets sick of it as well. Like, yes, it's great for our organisation in the sense that more people are engaged in trade period than almost any other stage of the year. Yeah. And this is why it won't change.
Because it's
become a business.
It has.
This period of the year is, as you say, Macca, from a Herald Sun perspective, this would be your most clicked upon.
It is.
Topics from a talkback perspective,
absolutely.
It's the most talked about because you've got 18 sets of fans that are engaged in this conversation because their club might be involved in something and they might be able to improve their list or they might lose a key player who they love, which is going to make them emotional, make them respond accordingly. And this is why it is such a big time of year. But the way it works at the moment and functions at the moment is...
Because it goes too long.
Possibly.
No question.
I think it is irresponsible. And it goes too long. And then everyone gets emotional because they get disappointed that nothing's happening.
Yep.
Well, it's a very easy fix. Just do it over 3 days.
And the same amount of trades would be done. It will not change because most of them, they know what they're doing now. It's just poker now in terms of whether we can squeeze that little bit extra out of another club.
Well, let's have a think about it. It's been now going 7, 9 days.
My goodness.
Hasn't it? Yeah, it has been going. This is the eighth day.
I don't know.
Eighth day. But the same names are being spoken about.
Absolutely.
And they still haven't been done. And now we're getting the randoms thrown out there, the Ollie Wines, the Robbie Grays, which... may or may not have been thrown up as potential
Hail Marys, in a sense, yeah, in a lot of ways.
And in the case of Robbie Gray, you know, Robbie's got 1 year left on a contract at Port Adelaide.
Where's Robbie off to? I've missed
No, it's just there's been a few clubs inquire about Robbie.
Because Robbie's got 1 year left on a contract. He can't get an extension at Port Adelaide. Clubs have found out about it and have asked the question.
Why can't he get an extension at Port Adelaide?
He's Robbie Gray. Giving one.
He's Robbie Gray.
He's in
they are 30s. Port Adelaide.
He's got 1 year left on a contract, and he hasn't been given the contract extension that he wants. So clubs find out about that and inquire.
He's Robbie Gray.
He is. He should be getting it. And that's why you can see clubs are out there, you know, and Port Adelaide will say, well, he's not up for grabs, but clubs are inquiring. And, you know.
Your club, Hawthorn, was interested in that one.
Hawthorn? Were they?
He'd get a game there.
He'd sneak in.
He would definitely get a game.
He'd go, okay.
Duke, would you take him in the brown and gold, Duke?
I certainly would.
I'd bloody take him in the brown and gold. That's a no-brainer. By the way, just on the only one situation, Sam Edwin has spoken in the last 10 or 15 minutes and said, at the start of last week, I got a tip that Carlton got a call out of the blue. It was someone acting on behalf of Ollie Wines, whether with or without his knowledge. That's the best way to describe it. In this space, clubs do use what we call intermediaries. Mackie, you can clarify for
they
us.
They do.
To keep themselves at arm's length of things like this happening so you can deny what's taken place.
Mm. And this is the thing, is that it's all about the wording.
Yep.
And when the clubs are very clever in what they say, and managers are very clever in what they say.
No doubt.
Intermediary. I'm just getting sick of the whole thing.
AFL treating fans like fools and disrespecting the game they run, says an SMS. The players have the power. This is to your point before, Whitey. How can they be treated like casino chips? They have final say where they want to go, says Ben. Well, they do and they don't sometimes, Benny. There's a lot of scenarios at play. Clubs can make it very difficult for you, make you feel very unwelcome very quickly.
They can.
When they don't want you there.
Absolutely.
Adam Peacock, though, is getting ready to watch the Socceroos in action as part of their World Cup qualifiers against Chinese Taipei at the National Stadium tonight in Taiwan. He joins us from Fox Sports. Good morning, Peacock.
Morning, Half. Morning, boys. How are we?
We are very well, thank you. Of course, we had the first weekend of the A-League as well, which we can touch on shortly. But the Socceroos back in action after their win over Nepal last week. It was a bit of a clinic. Is it tougher opposition tonight? You'll know this better than me.
No, it's not.
Right.
Right. We should do another number on them. Granted, we're playing away, so it might be a bit harder in that regard. But, they're a little bit low. Nepal, it is, actually. I learn something new every day. And last Thursday, I learned it's not Nepal, it's Nepal.
Is that right?
Nepal. Yeah.
Like Nepal dog food.
Nepal. When you, like, it's Nepalese, so I guess that kind of makes sense. So it's not Nepalese.
Right. No, it's you make a very good point.
There you go.
So how do we say Taiwan? Is it Taiwan?
That I've got to investigate further today, but I'm pretty sure. No, I think it's Chinese Taipei. So I'm thinking we've got that bang on. And also we should be too good for them in a football sense as well. That's the main thing. So, it's just another opportunity for Graham Arnold to learn a bit more about his players and whoever's playing striker to fill his boots.
Well, that's why you're an elite broadcaster, Adam, is because you just cover all those sorts of things and getting the pronunciation right. I can't even say it myself.
I'm telling you, can't pronounce pronounce. I'm telling you, it is a, like, working in football is a lesson in geopolitics as much as it is about sport. It's, a little bit fascinating sometimes. So, there's all kinds of things have gone down in Chinese Taipei, which we won't get into on a Tuesday morning right here on a particular broadcast service. But, it's interesting.
So is there any thoughts tonight then, or any whispers of resting any players? Because they've got a fully fit squad. Well,
Jamie McLaren's on the bench. That's what we're reading, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I think Adam Taggart's going to start, which is fair enough. I mean, Taggart's probably ahead of McLaren in terms of pecking order because he's been scoring for fun over in Korea. McLaren's been scoring for fun, but he's been doing it against NPL sides here in Australia, like second division clubs. So, on the whole, he has...
And Nepal.
And Nepal as well. I have to say against Nepal. But Taggart does deserve his chance by virtue of the fact that he's the leading scorer in the K-League, which is... a hell of an achievement for a striker. So, he's one of a number of challenges I'm hearing tonight. Aaron Moy's still going to start, but I dare say that he's not destined to play much more than at least an hour, I'd say.
So the K-League, talk me more about that. How, in terms of competition strength and depth compared to the A-League, where does it rank?
Yeah, it's better across the board, I'd say. not by much, but certainly at the top level as well. It's they've just got the bit better budgets, even though probably budget-wise, in order, it would go China, Japan, and then Korea out of the big four, big three East Asian nations. But it's still a damn hard place to go and score goals because defensively the Koreans are so good and so organised. So, yeah, he's done so well over there. I think he's 16 or 17 goals for Suwon. So, yeah, it's been an outstanding move for him and it's furthered him as a footballer and probably put him in the frame to be the leading striker for the Socceroos through this World Cup qualification process.
So how does Arnie keep everyone on edge at the moment? It's an unbelievably long campaign, a World Cup qualification campaign. How does he keep them on edge or does he not bother at this stage?
No, it's just a simple process of each camp is anew and just ticking over that way and making sure that his big thing, he's told me, is that he wants players to be playing to make his job easier. He doesn't want to have the situation where he's only got about 8 players that are playing regularly and then he has to make up the numbers by virtue of a couple of training sessions. That's really hard. So he wants guys to hit the ground running when they come into camp and not have to worry about their game smarts and how tuned they are in terms of playing regularly. So that most of them are at the moment, which is good news for Graham Arlen, but it can ebb and flow that because it's a difficult thing for a player to definitely hold down his place, especially considering he's flying all around the world to play for his national team. It doesn't go down too well with the top sometimes.
At what point do you start to get a feel for Graham Arnold's style and whether it's going to suit the Socceroos and all that sort of thing? It's kind of hard when we're going through these early World Cup qualifying matches, but are you getting a sense of it yet?
Yeah, it's a similar style to what took Sydney, gave Sydney such great success in the A-League. So it's utilising the fullbacks a lot. So Ryan Grant, and the other night it was Aziz Bage, tonight I'm hearing it's going to be Brad Smith, who's playing over in America at the moment, but just use the width that way and then use the smarts of like a number 10 like Aaron Moy and some strikers who can play in and around and finish off chances like McLaren did the other night. So that's a loose template. Now, the acid test isn't really going to come in this phase. Okay, Jordan away in November is going to be difficult because we've always had issues with Jordan away. But apart from that, we should skate through this process, this part of qualifying. The next part of qualifying when teams like we could cop a Korea or an Iran or a Japan in our group, that's when it's really going to have its test.
So the Socceroos in action tonight, 10:40. Check your local guides against Chinese Taipei. The weekend was the kickoff of the Hyundai A-League for another season. We had the Melbourne Derby at Marvel Stadium, which was a nil-all draw, which is a little bit lacklustre. But we had the new team in town, which we were keeping an eye on, in Western United, who had to travel to Wellington Phoenix with a man in charge who knew a fair bit about it, Mark Redan, and another man in the green and the black who just wanted an occasion, and he found one, didn't he, Bess?
Yes, Bess Aparicio again. Amazing. I was surprised that he started the game. He's not been back that long. He didn't have the extended preseason that the rest of them did. But, yeah, he was good. They're a team of winners this mob, far out. They're experienced. Diamante, he's an absolute gem. He's going to be so good to watch this season. It was just a really smart, savvy performance away from home from Western United, who played Perth Glory this weekend. So they get a real big test against the best team in the competition from last year across the course of the 27 rounds from last year, Perth Glory. So, yeah, it's a really positive start for Western United, and they have to get off to a positive start to attract fans and attract people to their games. Otherwise, it's going to be a really hard sell playing away from what is going to be their base moving forward.
Mello Trimble was a part of the Melbourne United crew that took on the LA Clippers yesterday in the NBA crossover matches, which we love as basketball fans. I'm sure he did too, being out there for Melbourne United. G'day, Mello.
G'day, how you doing?
We're going really well, buddy. What was it like yesterday for the Melbourne United crew to be out there against the Clippers at the Staples Center?
It was a good experience for us. We came here on Thursday, a long flight, and got adjusted pretty fast, started practicing right away, and we had a game yesterday against the Clippers, and I thought the experience was really well for us. I mean, we played really well on both ends of the court. You know, obviously they got all on us, and just at the second half, they came out with more energy. But other than that, I felt like we improved a lot of areas that we've been trying to improve on, just getting the season started.
So in the end, the scoreline was 118-100 in favour of the home side of the Clippers. But at halftime, it was 51-47. You must have been pretty confident with the way things are rolling at halftime, Mello.
Yeah, we were pretty confident. You know, they were getting frustrated. We were playing with a lot of confidence. Like I said, on both ends, we were really effective. We really run our offense to a good pace. And also on the defense end, we scouted them pretty well, and we just play hard. I mean, we know we're still down, you know, two of our players, and if we just went out there and played hard, and that's what it's all about.
And Mello, what are the guys, is there a real buzz when you're playing a team like the LA Clippers? I mean, surely you can learn a lot of things off them, man, the way they move and, you know, what they do with the ball and things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's probably one of the best things in the NBA, you know. I mean, if you look at the roster, I mean, of course, Paul George and Kawhi didn't play, but, you know, they got other players like Lou Will, Patrick Beverly, Montrezl Harrell. So, I mean, just knowing how athletic those guys are, it gives us a different look. And, you know, Lou Will can score from anywhere on the court. So, I felt like they gave us a new look, you know, not to, like, what we're used to seeing in the NBL. But, I mean, we had a lot of confidence going in that we could play with those guys. And, you know, it turned out that we was able to. But, you know, even though the result didn't end how we wanted to, I felt like we got better and we were all pleased with the effort that we gave.
And what did happen in that third quarter? Because you guys came out there and you put up everything, and then in that third quarter, it just fell away at fraction.
Yeah, I mean, 12-minute quarter is a little different for us. You know, we used to play 7-minute quarters, and I guess we kind of just got fatigued, and, you know, a lot of our shots were short, and, you know, they were making a lot of their shots, and they, you know, got more stops than we did. So, I mean, credit to them, and, you know, the way they came out at halftime, you know, what we want to come out at halftime with a lot of more energy, even though we had the lead, and, you know, they just played more desperate than we did.
So, Mello, when you found out before the game that Kawhi wasn't going to play, how flat were you?
I mean, we all wanted Kawhi to play. You know, he's one of the best players in the world. And, you know, just to get an opportunity to be on the same court as them was, you know, just different for us. But, you know, when we found out he wasn't playing and also Paul George, we kind of just, I guess we got more confident on that, you know, we could actually really compete with the team. And that's the way we played.
And so what did you learn from the game? You know, you had the game on your terms pretty much for most of the first half until that third quarter. Do you sort of leave feeling confident about where your team is at? Because it is a bit of a sort of a fact-finding mission for you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, our defense was like a really key point, you know, during the game. And I felt like our defense was like really well. So, I mean, I felt like they gave us a lot of confidence knowing that we could play defense and we could guard anybody in the world, you know, just playing NBA guys. Those are the best players in the world. So, like I said, even though we came up with the L, we really picked up a lot of positive things. And going forward, like, we come back to the NBL, we're going to be really excited to play against teams on, you know, how it was a good play on defense end.
And what about you personally? There's obviously the team aspect, but yourself to play against an NBA team, to put your own name back up in lights, is that factored in at all when you're playing?
Yeah, I mean, I was really nervous. You know, that was my first opportunity able to play at that level and, you know, to get a big role like I did yesterday, you know, with Melbourne. You know, I'm a starter, so. I mean, I was really nervous for the game, knowing who I had to go up against. Patrick Beverly, one of the best on-ball defenders there is in the league. So, I mean, I had a big task on my hand. And, you know, for it to be my first time playing at that stage, I was really nervous. But, you know, once the ball went out, all the jitters went out, and I just played. And, you know, I would just go out there and play to get everyone respect. And I felt like I did that at the end of the game.
And, Mello, how are you enjoying Melbourne, one of the greatest cities in the world?
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot. I mean, it's just like I'm from Washington, D.C., so, I mean, it's just the same city. It's cold, and, you know, I'm used to the cold. I like the cold. I don't really like the heat too much, but, you know, it is what it is. But I like the city a lot, and there's a lot of nice people there, and, you know, I'm just getting accustomed to, you know, obviously the drive and, you know, the hook turns and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it gets you, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, we're Uber now, so I think I'm going to stick to Uber, but, I mean, I'm like...
Eddie Betts is now number one again at Carlton. He's back in Navy, where he's very, very comfortable after 184 games prior to his... sojourn, a little hiatus over at Adelaide. He's back in the navy blue and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Eddie, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are we?
We're going very well, mates. You were emotional yesterday. You were talking about what it was like to be back at Carlton. Can you actually believe it's happened?
No, I don't, to be honest. You know, I never thought I'd come back and play for the Blues. And, you know, they've always been in my heart because I'm a life member and I've always watched them from afar. But to come home and finish off the career, it's something special.
We've been waiting for it. It's been mooted for a couple of weeks that you could be a chance to get back at Navy Blue headquarters there at Icon Park. It took a long time. Now, I worked out why, Eddie, because you had to go through the acting classes to get the little promotion on social media, the Back to the Future gig. That was unbelievable. How'd that go?
Nah, that was that happened about 7 years ago for the Best and Fairest. We did some filming at Carlton, and they brought it back up. And the funny thing was, like, I'm sponsored by Adidas, and... on that film there, they got me in Nike shoes.
Oh, no.
So hopefully that won't get out.
The sponsors never like that, do they?
No, they don't.
But how was it, mate? I saw you give a couple of the fans a big kiss and a hug. They must be pretty happy down there to see you. It's the same old people down there.
Yeah, the same old the fans, the cheer squad were there, and I'm pretty close with those guys. And yeah, it was a bit weird, actually, to be honest, walking back into Icon Park. You know, I'd never been there for 6 years, and walk back into the ground and on the oval. It was a weird feeling, but, you know, still hasn't really sunk in yet, to be completely honest with you.
Was it a tough decision, Ed? Because I know I saw a couple of Instagram posts, Big Tex Walker and Big Sauce put up a few photos, and you're obviously a much-loved person there at Adelaide. Was it tough to sort of break those relationships? Obviously, you'll stay in touch with them, but to move on?
Yeah, it is really tough, and I actually thought back on the way home on the plane. I'm like, am I making the right decision? And I know that I am making the right decision for myself, the right time for myself and my family, and where my footy is at the moment. And you know, we've been through a lot in this footy club. We've been to hell and back, and you know, we lost the grand final, and then probably the most important one was, you know, the death to Phil Walsh that really brought this group together. And you know, we've been really close since then, and it's hard to say goodbye. And I told the boys the other day that it's not the end, and it's not goodbye. We're still going to stay friends forever, but I'm going to be on a different team. So it was really tough, and it was actually a bit emotional. And yeah, so finally now it's done and over, and I can look forward to packing up, moving all my gear back to Melbourne.
So did you need it, Eddie, just in your own self? You needed to try something new, get back to where it started, just to cleanse yourself of all that difficult times, all those difficult times at Adelaide?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe, like I said just then, I think it was the right time for myself, and especially for family as well. You know, we have four young kids, and my mother lives in Western Australia, and my father lives down in Port Lincoln, and we really don't have any support with family here, and all my wife's family is back home as well. We've got a lot of friends back in Melbourne as well that could help out in that aspect, and we're putting all that together with my footy and support. We thought it was the right time.
If David Teague wasn't coaching, would you have been so enthusiastic?
Yeah, I probably would still be. You know, obviously, me and David are close mates, and I've played with David when he was at Carlton, when we were at Carlton together, and, you know, he coached me for 3 years at the Adelaide Crows. But, yeah, it's just interesting how things turn out, and now he's a senior coach. It'll be interesting to go and play under him as the senior coach, because he's a wonderful person, David.
Just a little bit more, Eddie, on the decision to come back. When did it first cross your mind about potentially coming back to Carlton? Obviously, you didn't have the year you would have loved at the Crows this year, and I think we're all surprised when you're playing in the SANFL there at one point. When was it that you started to think, might need a change?
To be honest, it would have been about a month ago, to be honest. Like, I've always had it in the back of my mind, should I? And then it only got serious about a month and a half ago, where we started talking about the possibility coming back to Carlton or Gold Coast, you know, because Gold Coast offered me a 3-year deal, and I actually turned that one down just to get back to Melbourne for that family support as well. So, it was a hard decision, to be honest, but it was only about a month and a half ago when it got really serious.
And if you had your time again, would have you gone across to Adelaide, or would have you stayed a one-club player?
No, I think I would have came across to Adelaide. You know, just coming across, yeah, different change. You know, I was a different player over here at the Adelaide Crows. My leadership grew when I was here. You know, I spoke up more. I became a better person, a better teammate, and a better leader. And I believe that's what I can offer going back to Carlton. I'm a different person, and I believe I'm a different player going back to Carlton. When I was first at Carlton, you know, I was that quiet, shy boy that really didn't speak up. I wasn't, I would say I was professional, but I wasn't that professional, just with off-field stuff. And, you know, I've really grown up since then, and they're going to see a different Eddie Betts, I guess.
Is that in the extension of that question is to say, do you feel like you want to go back and finish at Carlton as the new Eddie Betts to have that bit more of an impact on the footy club, not just for your goals, but for everything else?
Yeah, I do. I believe so, because I'm a life member of that footy club, and I love the footy club, and I want to see that footy club do well and successful. So for me to go back now, it's like a fairy tale ending and homecoming at the same time, and I'm really looking forward to it, what I can do on the field and off.
Well, the Blues faithful are absolutely rapt to have you back. I reckon footy fans are pretty keen to see you back in the Navy Blue as well, Eddie. And we can't wait to see what 2020 holds for you and also the Carlton Football Club as well. Well done, mate. Looking forward to catching up with you soon. Good luck in the Navy Blue.
Thanks. Half you coaching the girls, right?
You betcha.
You got a spot for me there to help out?
Mate, any time you like.
There we go.
Consider yourself hired.
Do I need a forward line coach?
Mate, you can do whatever the hell you like. You can take my job. Good on you, buddy. We'll chat soon.
Chat very soon.
Eddie Betts, absolutely. I've now got an assistant. That's a beauty. What a great result. That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.